I say this all the time. It ain't what you use, it's the way that you use it. And I really believe it. Mastering is simple. Not easy, but simple. And any modern DAW has more than enough tools to enable you to get great results. But the last few years have seen some genuinely revolutionary new plugins being released. They enable us to change things at the mastering stage that we could only dream about even a few years ago. And some of my favourites are made by Leapwing Audio. Products like Stage 1, which gives you amazing control of the depth and stereo width of your audio with far more control and subtlety than basic mid-side tweaks. Or Dyne 1, which is my favourite tool for applying parallel or upwards compression to get extra fullness, density and richness in the master without squashing the life out of it. There's so much more to these tools, and they're so powerful, I almost need to remind myself, just because I can use them at the mastering stage doesn't necessarily mean that I should. But even being able to try an experiment and offer an example to a client to encourage them to make a mix tweak can be super helpful. And when there isn't the time or the resources for alterations, they are invaluable. You can check out these and all Leapwing's other products now at leapwing.com. It ain't what you use, it's the way that you use it, but sometimes Leapwing is just the thing. Hello, and welcome to The Mastering Show. My name is Ian Shepherd. I'm a mastering engineer, and I run the production advice website aimed at helping you get the best results recording, mixing, and mastering your music. And joining me, as ever, is my co-host, John Tidy, from ReaperBlog.net. Hi, John.
Hello.
Okay, let's get down to business. This week's show is about clipping. Probably everybody listening knows what clipping is. What they might be surprised to hear me say is that I use clipping sometimes and that there are some benefits to clipping. But before we get to all of that, I guess we should talk about what it is. I mean, I've done a bunch of blog posts on this topic and some videos and stuff, and that's really easy because you can just show people. We can't show people because this is, well, it's not radio, but it's podcast. So I was thinking about it earlier today, and I've come up with an analogy. I'm not convinced it's the best analogy in the world, but it's very visual, so go with me. So I want everybody to imagine a row of trees, fir trees, in front of you, and they're fir trees of different heights. So you look at them, and they're silhouetted against the sky, and you can see this kind of spiky outline of the fir trees against the sky. That's my analogy for the audio waveform, for the spiky shape of an audio waveform. Now you need to imagine a huge rotary fan hovering above the trees, or maybe a helicopter flying upside down or something. And it's so huge that the blades span from one end of the line of trees to the other. And then you have to imagine that the entire row of trees is on some kind of hydraulic lift system so that you can lift this row of trees up towards the fan. So initially, there's maybe 2 or 3 feet of clear space in between the tops of the trees and the fan. And then gradually you lift it up and you lift it up, and you're using up that headroom until the tip of the tallest tree is hanging just below the rotary fan. And I'm guessing everybody listening to this will realize that we've effectively normalized the trees, right? We've peak normalized the trees. So we've lifted them so there's no more available headroom. Now, if you use the hydraulic lift to lift the line of trees any higher, that fan starts chopping into the trees and you know, it's carnage. It's not a bloodbath, but it's a sap bath. And then at some point you can start, kind of say, okay, enough. And you lower the hydraulic lift down again, and you're left with, you no longer have this wonderful spiky tree line in front of you. It's been flat topped. It's been clipped. See what I did there? Clipping a hedge, yeah. Trees? No. yeah, you don't sound impressed.
Yeah.
And that's my visual analogy for clipping. That's what happens in audio when you lift the audio signal higher than the headroom of the system that it can accommodate. The tops of the waveforms just get sliced off. So, you weren't impressed by my analogy, were you?
No. I like to think of a person in a room, and there's a ceiling, there's a floor, and there's a ladder going up to the ceiling. So he starts to climb the ladder, and when he hits the top, he hits his head, right? And we're telling him to go higher. So in digital, he's just getting squished. He's getting crushed. He can't go any higher. In analog, he gets squished, but he's going up a little bit higher. He's breaking through the ceiling. So that's my analogy, I guess.
So I have another analogy, which is about a boxer in a box. But we've done the boxing analogy, so I'm not going to go there. I think my analogy is better than your analogy because...
You can see the peaks in it.
You can see the peaks, but you can see the peaks getting sliced off. Because let's leave it analog. I mean, it's great because we need to move on to the difference between analog and digital clipping. Let's leave analog to one side for a minute. In a digital system, you know, the clipping is when the signal, the waveform signal, goes above zero. And it's not like he gets squashed up against anything gets squashed up against the ceiling. It's not like those trees get kind of squashed up against the rotary fan. If that was the case, when the floor went back down again, or he went back down the ladder or whatever. And the problem with digital is when he comes back down, he has no head. You know, with digital audio, the any numbers up higher than zero just disappear. And I mean, the same applies to analog, although, yeah, the difference between, as opposed to analog and digital, it's really hard versus soft clipping. Digital is kind of the ultimate in hard clipping, in the sense that the signal is fine, the signal is fine, the signal is fine, then it hits zero and suddenly it's all flat. So it's an instantaneous slicing off of the peaks of the waveform. There's no transition, it just happens. Whereas in analog, you know, what we're talking about is nothing to do with numbers. You're talking about pushing the signal up so that there's no headroom in the components of the hardware. And in that situation, the transition from not clipping to clipping is much more gradual. And there's a ton of different, you know, ways that can happen, which is, I think, one of the things that makes analog clipping more interesting and more varied.
Because it could be frequency specific and things like that.
It can be frequency specific, absolutely. And it can, well, you know, and you can have a gradual transition into something that clips, which I guess maybe something like analog tape, or you can have quite a hard transition, not as hard probably as pure digital clipping, but quite a sudden transition depending on the gear. Well, and then it comes down to the things like the harmonic content, which we'll get onto in a minute. So yeah, I like to think, I mean, you know, digital is well, it's more complicated because there are digital emulations of analog or soft clipping. But I think for me, the distinction is hard clipping versus soft clipping. And kind of the next obvious question is, what do they sound like? And as I hinted just a minute ago, the thing about analog is because there are so many different varieties and types of clipping that can happen, it's not easy to say what it sounds like. One of the things about digital clipping is that it is what it is. And you can be more sure how it's going to sound. However, a key aspect of both analog and digital, or hard and soft clipping, is that they sound different depending on what the material is. So let's just, if you look at the kind of simple case of digital hard clipping, and you think of something like a snare sound, or maybe a distorted electric guitar, where there's a lot of, especially high frequency noise in the signal to begin with, you could probably clip those kind of signals fairly hard without hearing blatant distortion. Whereas if you take a much more pure sound, like, say, the high registers of a piano, or a clean solo electric guitar, or a female vocal, even a couple of dBs can introduce obvious distortion in those cases. And when that happens, to me, the kind of words that come to mind would be gritty or clicky or fizzy or kind of buzzing kind of distortion sounds. Do you agree with those? Is that how you hear them? What words do you use to describe it?
Yeah, it brings out a harshness that wasn't there originally. And you know, I could clip drums all day, no problem with that. I could put loads of distortion and clipping on drums, and it tends to just sound better. Up to a certain point. Piano, just the slightest bit, and I cannot listen to it anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Well, actually, I don't agree about clipping all day and it only sounding better on drums, but I certainly...
You can get away with a lot more.
I think you can get away with a lot more in kind of noisy stuff that sounded noisy originally, that had lots of high-frequency content, lots of noise-like kind of random... hash in it anyway, because that's the kind of stuff that it adds, so it gets masked.
But there's also like the transient shape pushing up the signal against a brick wall, essentially, without the pumping artifacts that you would get with a limiter. And I'm sure we'll get into this stuff later, the differences between clipping and limiting, and or compression, or just outright distortion. But I find it, I can use more clipping than I can of other things to get certain tones on drums. With piano, can't use any. It just immediately sounds bad to me. I've heard some, there was something I was listening to earlier this week that has a lot of distorted piano in it, and I can't listen to that album.
Yeah, that's the bit where I was saying I definitely agree with you. Piano and certain other instruments, it's kind of, I'm the same. It's like, no, for me. In fact, possibly the thing that gave me the idea for this topic for the show is I was involved in a fairly heated Facebook debate with Ethan Weiner, who runs Real Traps, an excellent company making acoustic treatment in the US. He's got something of a name for being a bit of a mythbuster in terms of kind of coming out and, well, poo-pooing the idea that you can hear the difference between dither and truncated audio, for example, and whether high sample rates are audible or not, all kinds of stuff. But in this case, he was suggesting that clipping is not as bad as everyone, you know, clipping is often held up as the devil, the ultimate sin. And he was saying, oh, come on, it's, you know, it's just another form of distortion. It's not that much worse. And actually a bunch of other people felt we had to weigh in and say, actually, no, it is, digital clipping in particular is worse than analog clipping and any number of other things, even when the effects of it are quite mild. And I think one of the reasons that I feel it's worse is that it's very unnatural sounding. All these other kinds of soft clipping that we're talking about, you know, overdriving a mic or a preamp or the mix bus in a desk or a piece of analog tape and all the rest of it, they all kind of, I don't know if I say natural, but they're types of distortion that occur in the real world to some extent. Whereas, you know, just like truncation distortion in terms of not dithering things, digital clipping just, it's a pure kind of artifact of the numbers. It's just this, it doesn't feel right to me.
I was going to say that there's a more gradual roll off or roll up on a compressor. It would be called knee with analog. It's more like that. So you're getting lower amounts of distortion happening up to 12 dB below. And with a software hard clipper or hitting your converter too hard, it's basically on or off. You're either clipping it or it's fine.
Yeah, that's true. I think of it as a kind of like a soft knee as well. Although one thing I should say is even with soft clipping, at some point or another, the signal just flattens off. You know, there's a point where whatever system you're pushing can't go any further. And at that point, again, the analogy is closer to the rotary blade slicing the tops off trees than it is to something being squashed up into a confined space. You do then lose something. So two interesting things I was going to mention about digital clipping that's reminded me of. One is, it kind of makes sense to me that it sounds clicky, it sounds buzzy, it sounds gritty. Because if you just imagine a smooth sine wave and then clipping it pretty severely so that you flat top off all of those nice rounded peaks, what you're left with kind of starts to look like a square wave, because you have quite steep sides and then the top chopped off. And a square wave is a really buzzy, clicky, harsh, gritty sound. In fact, it's kind of, I mean, if you think in terms of a waveform, if you think of what a click is a very rapid up and down kind
voltage
of shape
spike.
Voltage spike in the waveform, right? That's why it sounds like a click, because the signal goes from not very much to really a lot very, very fast. So you just hear that change in energy. And either end of the square bits of a square wave, that's exactly what's happening. You're going from one voltage to another one very fast. So when you think that that's what you're doing to the waveform, it makes perfect sense that any of the kind of the smooth tones that are part of that audio signal are going to have that gritty, harsh quality added into them. The other thing I was going to say is that I did some experiments with this years ago now, where I really pushed various different types of clipping hard. I think from memory, it was something like 12 dBs worth of clipping, just to kind of see how big a difference there was. And the thing that I remember that I noticed that happens with digital that doesn't happen with any of the soft types of clipping that I was experimenting with is that beyond a certain point, you start to lose frequency content. we all know that if you want to make things super loud, then it's important to reduce the amount of bass, because the bass is the thing that distorts first and sounds worse. But actually, even if you don't reduce the bass, when you really extremely hard clip something, you actually start to lose bass content. And I don't looked into the theory of that in detail, but my kind of hand-wavy explanation for it is that you're effectively removing the original waveform shape that was there. You're changing a sine wave with, well, in fact, if you think about a natural sound, you have a sine wave and then you have harmonics. And what those harmonics tend to do is add kind of ripples towards the top of the waveform. So your thing that used to be a smooth up and down wave shape kind of becomes a smooth up and down wave shape with some ripples and some wobbles around it at the top. If you just slice the top off all of those waveforms, you're effectively, the information about those frequencies is no longer in that waveform. They've literally gone. Whereas with a kind of a soft clipping type scenario, it's much more like the guy climbing the ladder and getting squashed up against the ceiling, having less and less space to fit into. Those parts of the waveform, they get squashed, they become less important, but their shape changes, and you might get some extra wiggles and stuff thrown in. So it all changes, but those things are still there, or they're retained for longer. And it's something I don't often hear, but you hear it in a lot of kind of hip hop. I find it really ironic, because the whole thing about hip hop is this huge, for me, a lot of it is the huge low end, these you know, the huge beats, the bass line and all the rest of it. But also clipping distortion is used a lot, and that actually fights against, for me, everything that was important about the music in the first place, because if you push it hard enough, the bass actually just starts to disappear and is not part of the signal anymore, and just kind of replaced by this mush. I mean, is that something you've noticed?
Not really.
Well, that's your homework.
And I never gave it a lot of thought.
Well, yeah, I guess that's, you know, I obviously had too much time on my hands.
Perhaps.
Actually, it reminds me, there is a video on my website. We can put the link in the show notes at themasteringshow.com, where, you know, it's really hard to talk about how this stuff sounds. People can head over there. There's some demonstrations of different types of clipping and also a comparison with limiting, which, you're right, I want to come to that in a bit. But anybody can try this. You know, get something that's kind of got some nice kind of fairly pure bass sound, you know, not a kind of upper mid-rangey harmonic-y kind of bass sound, a kind of deep, rich bass sound. Clip it really hard and then level match it and listen, and you'll just hear a load of that richness and that tone in the bass. It's not just that it's adding distortion higher up. The richness and the tone, the actual frequency content, I bet if you ran an analyzer on it, you would see it, is reduced, just because the waveform shape is destroyed.
How would someone clip it? And by quite a lot. In the DAW, what would they use?
I mean, the easiest way is just to turn it up and then export
Although it. If you turn it down, you do have to export it. If you turn it up on one fader, turn it down on the next fader, the clipping will be removed because it's floating point.
Right, because you have floating point, which we've mentioned before, and I'll come back to in a little while. Well, I guess we could talk about it now. Yeah, I mean, no, let's come back to it later. so if you take something that's already peaking close to zero, crank it up by 12 dBs, export it or bounce it or consolidate it, whatever the terminology is in your DAW, and then bring that file back in and turn it back down again. And just like when you lower the hydraulic ramp with the trees, see, the analogy wasn't that bad, you know. When you lower the hydraulic ramp with the trees on it, they still have the tops chopped off, right? The fact that they're not in the fan anymore, the damage has been done. And the same thing applies to audio. And that's why clipping is a problem. I've got here, we need to talk about the problems and the benefits. And one of the problems is it's very hard. Well, it's almost impossible. There are some digital tools where you can, to some extent, rescue hard digital clipped audio. But analog clipping is really hard to undo. I'd go so far as to say it's probably impossible. With the tech that's around at the moment. So in order to do that comparison, kind of lock the changes in somehow, save the file out, bring it back in, and you'll see the waveform has just been clipped. And once you've turned it back down 12 dBs, then you can do that comparison. You could also use, there's a ton of plugins and things that do this kind of stuff. But again, we can talk about that at the end because I kind of had those in the tools category. And that's, you know, just straight clipping is probably the quickest way to achieve that result. Okay, maybe we should talk a little bit more about why soft clipping doesn't sound so ugly. Do you know the stuff about the harmonics? I was going to look this up and I didn't have time. The harmonic content of a digitally or hard clipped signal versus a soft clipped signal is different. When you overdrive amplifiers, for example, or speaker cabs or whatever, you can get nice distortion that introduces harmonics that sound pleasing to us. And I think it's either odd or even harmonics. I can never remember which one it is.
It's even order harmonics, which is multiples of the fundamental frequency. It'd be like 1K, 2K, 4K, 8K, those intervals.
And that makes sense because those emulate the kind of the natural frequency response of sounds in the first place. Whereas odd harmonics don't sound great. And what you get with digital distortion is, I think they're called N-harmonic. It's N-harmonic distortion, which basically means actually it's just a mess. It's just...
it's random. It doesn't have a musical or mathematical correlation to the original sound.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons I think that it sounds so unnatural and it sounds so unpleasant to us. So depending on which type of clipping you're using and depending on your taste, it can sound bad. In some cases, it can sound really bad. So that's a problem if you don't like the way that it is. Another problem is, like I just said, it's really hard to compare. I think it's a problem that it's unnatural. Do you think of any other problems I haven't covered?
Clipping can happen at any point in the signal chain. It can happen at the microphone. It can happen at your preamp, the output of your preamp into your converter, some sort of digital tricks that you're doing on the recording input in your DAW, you know, any number of places in a mix. And when it gets to mastering, usually if you see clipping, you send it back. But it's usually no big deal to have a little bit of clipping on purpose in a master.
Right. And we'll get to that in a minute. Before we do that, yeah. Well, I guess we're kind of there because now we're going to talk, and those are the problems. We can now talk about the benefits. I only have two benefits though. I mean, and one of them, I guess, is not so much that it's a benefit as that it's just a reason that it's not necessarily so bad. And we touched on it, which is that small amounts can be hard to hear, especially actually digital clipping. Despite the fact that I've been really hard on hard digital clipping up to this point, it is true that small amounts of it can be really tough to pick out, especially if it's on, you know, percussive or very transient material. It depends on taste and it depends on the material, but it can be quite transparent, which is why it gets used in mastering.
There may be a point where it is clipping without adding harmonics.
Yeah, it's effectively just damaging the transients, and transients don't have harmonic content because they're much more noise-like signals anyway. So you're just kind of changing the quality of what was there. I mean, I still feel there's a brittle kind of edgy quality to it that I don't like. I mean, I'm just not a big fan of it. Occasionally I've clipped things by accident and not noticed. And occasionally people have insisted that I clip things in order to achieve the kind of result I'm about to start talking about. And you know, I have accepted that it doesn't sound that bad. And I guess that's the point that Ethan was trying to make before we all weighed in on him, is that, you know, it's not necessarily the spawn of the devil, depending on the context.
Yeah, so it could be a situation where you have a sound that is extremely short, let's say 1 millisecond of a snare drum, just that transient there. You can clip that by 3 dB. It basically removes that top 3 dB of that snare drum at that 1 millisecond. And now that snare drum is 3 dB lower, although the weight of the sound is still there. It may lose a little bit of punch, or through distortion, it might increase its punch. But now that spike for 1 millisecond isn't triggering your limiter. And that's the main reason I use clipping really in a mix or a mastering. It doesn't hit your limiter the same way.
Yeah, and this is where we need to talk about the difference between... So the main point about it is, you know, all limiters and compressors have effectively attack and release times. So there's an amount of time it takes for them to have the effect they're going to have, and then there's an amount of time it takes for them to stop having the effect they just had. And what you usually hear, and what that video that I was talking about demonstrates, is one way or another, you can hear that, you know, up to a point.
If a compressor is too fast, it makes a popping sound.
That can happen. I was thinking more of pumping and just kind of a reduction of impact, a dulling of the effect, because you're kind of reducing the rate of change of the audio signal, right? You're reducing the speed with which it gets from where it was going to where it went. Whereas when you just clip something,
you can definitely lose high frequencies with compression.
Yeah, you can lose a sense of life. You can it can sound less open, less clear. But I think for me, the main thing that I hear is it. Sometimes you can't get it to sound as though it's hitting as hard just using a limiter. It just softens the sound kind of inevitably. So if we're talking about the benefits and the advantages and why you might want to use clipping, the answer is you can boost that level without any of those negative side effects of limiting. Now, I don't personally ever use straight hard digital clipping, or only in very rare occasions that I described. I don't do it by choice. What I do use, some of the time, I'm not going to say a lot, but I don't know, maybe, well, definitely 1 in 10 and maybe 1 in 5 times, I guess, I might use some soft clipping, typically an emulation of analog style clipping, for exactly that reason. You can keep the aggression in the sound. I mean, actually, another interesting situation is where you have something and it's loud enough in terms of the level and in terms of what I'm hearing, but it sounds too polite. So that kind of softening, that kind of the cleanness of a really good limiter that you're not pushing too hard, maybe that's not what you want. Maybe you want a bit of bite, you want a bit of energy, you want some of that aggression, maybe you even want some of that distortion, because basically what you're trading with clipping versus limiting is pumping versus distortion. Clipping achieves sometimes a more apparently transparent result, kind of paradoxically, by adding some distortion. And I got into quite another interesting debate on Facebook, this time with Stephen Slate, who I'm sure everybody has heard of, about his FGX plugin, which they kind of market as a limiter, but it's not. It's actually a very sophisticated clipper. The idea is that it varies the type of clipping depending on the material to use the most transparent type. And then you can obviously dial in other parameters to try and retain more of the apparent impact and punch of the material before clipping afterwards.
That sounds really smart.
It does sound really smart, except this was a case. He had posted, he says, it was a kind of putting my money where my mouth is kind of post. He said, take a listen to this. You know, I managed to get far more transparent results lifting this audio with the FGX than with any other of these limiters that I had tried. And he posted these two clips. And the one that had been boosted through the FGX did sound good. I have no problem with the way that it sounded, but it didn't sound transparent to me because I was hearing distortion that was being added. Because that's what the FGX does. It's kind of very controlled, very nuanced distortion. From where I sit, that's not what transparent means. Whereas he felt that it sounded more transparent in the sense that it retained more of the dynamic feel of the original, despite the fact that the peaks had been controlled. And the distortion didn't bother him that much because he felt that it was appropriate for the material. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that. It was kind of EDM style stuff. So we had an interesting and very polite conversation that went on for quite a while, and lots of good points got made. Actually, if I can dig out the link, we could put that in the show notes as well for anybody who wants to check it out. But my final position was, you know, if you choose to use clipping, the FGX in this case, or anything else, that's fine, but be aware that it's a choice. It's not some kind of magic bullet that enables you to do all this stuff that you can't do with limiting. It achieves something similar in a different way. And so I very much feel it should be a choice rather than a default. You know, the FGX would not be, I mean, it's absolutely a great tool in certain situations for a certain kind of sound on certain kinds of material. But it's not, I would never use it as my only method of controlling peak levels. getting back to the advantages, I agree with you. One of the key advantages of using some clipping in there is that you can reduce the amount of work that the limiter has to do. So rather than having a limiter doing 6 dBs of peak reduction, you could have 2 or 3 dBs of soft clipping, followed by 2 or 3 dBs of limiting. Neither process has to work too hard. You can balance the two against each other, trade them off, and get a better result, a more transparent result for me, you know, a more inaudible, a more unnoticeable result to get the goal that you're going for.
I think the loudness rating would be the same.
Yeah,
as well, but without that pumping.
Yes, that's right. It's the, you know, because the loudness is based on, you know, roughly speaking, the RMS or the, you know, the LUFS reading, and peak level has almost nothing to do with loudness. I mentioned this back in one of the really early episodes, but, you know, if you just kind of compare the sound of a gunshot or a snare hit with a sustained sound like a flute, if you match the peak levels, the flute will sound way, way, way louder than the gunshot or the snare hit. What you need to match is the RMS levels, in which case the peak levels will be way different, but the loudness will sound similar. And the same thing applies here. You know, well, if you push things really hard into a limiter, this is the thing, because it is actually pulling back the gain in order to achieve its result, sometimes you will get something that's not quite as loud as if it went through a clipper. But I think for me, then you're getting into the territory of pushing limiters too hard. As I said in the episode on limiting, and I've said kind of every so often, for me, if you can really hear a limiter working and it's changing the quality of the sound, you're probably working it too hard. And I guess that's a case where I might reach for a clipper, is if I want something to be as loud as I have it, but I'm hearing the limiter working, then possibly using some clipping might be, some soft clipping might be a way to achieve that result. Unless you think I've missed anything on that, we could talk about the tools. And we could talk about the plugins. What are your favorite hardware or software tools for clipping?
I don't use any hardware for clipping intentionally. I mean, other than like guitar chains, mm-hmm. I would use a tube screamer to clip before the amp. And that's an extremely common way of doing it, where it's intended, because you lose some bass. It cleans up it tightens up the sound. But in software, especially in mixing and mastering situations, there's LVC Audio Clip Shifter. There's a free version and a pro version. Pro version has like MS controls, and it even has attack and release controls, which is quite odd. But it has a really great graph where it's showing the peaks over time, and you can see the threshold controls. There's a threshold and a ceiling control, and there's makeup gain and controls over what types of harmonics or the harmonic shape, mm-hmm. from hard to quite rounded.
That sounds cool.
And it's a very interesting one. It's pretty affordable. There's also the one in the T-Rex bundle.
Classic Clipper,
I think
isn't
it's just called Classic Clipper. Super easy to use. There's three knobs. There's like a input gain, the shape of the clipping, and then an output control that goes above zero. It's intended to be used before a limiter or compression, just to manage the peaks. So I'm using that one fairly often. I think that one does sound probably the best. I had another one. Oh, there's just some that are included with Reaper.
Right.
Just the JS plugins. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
But it seems like a pretty simple technology that I have no idea how it is achieved.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all variations on a theme. I mean, I have no idea how the FGX works in detail, for example, because I don't think things like the FGX use actual clipping. You know, I think it's exactly what you were saying. They have a variable knee, and they just define a signal maximum that it can't go above, which is effectively what happened. That's a byproduct of clipping. I mean, in theory, you could do the same thing. You could go through with the pencil tool that you used to have in sound tools and stuff, and just kind of draw a flat top across all of the waves in a signal. In fact, there's probably some audio processing where you can do that. That would clip them without the signal ever having gone near digital zero. So I think kind of just getting nerdy on the whole definition of clipping. I mean, you could clip something to any level. We could lower the level of the upside down helicopter blades we don't have to push the signal up into them. We could reduce it down and chop the tops of the trees off that way. The net result is that the signal gets clipped, but there's a million ways to skin the cat, I would think.
Yeah. Oh, Ozone also has a clipping mode in the Maximizer.
Has it? I haven't tried that.
It's in Ozone 5 for sure. It's just one of the limiter modes.
Okay.
Probably the one you would want to use least.
I've missed that. So my favorite is included with the I keep mentioning this, the TC Electronic, it's the MD3 package that you would have to use that you can get with the PowerCore expansion system that's not available anymore, but it also is available in their System 6000, the kind of megabucks hardware unit. There's a soft clipping mode in the limiter there, which is the first one that really I ever used, and that I still is one of the best sounding as far as I'm concerned. But I have also used the Kazrog, I think that's right, K-Clip clipper. I've used the T-Rex one. Okay. And the Kazrog is also very affordable and has quite, especially version 2 now, has quite a lot of flexibility. One thing to be aware of is that it has a control called softness, which by default is at 0. And if you just use it like that, you're basically just hard clipping. So it's like your digital clipping, even if you change boost the input gain and reduce the output gain to so that you're not actually clipping it. If you want it to sound kind of a bit analogy and a bit soft, you need to turn the softness control up. But that also shows you how much you've clipped things by. It gives you a waveform preview in and out. So that's a pretty nice tool. I've also used some of the kind of console emulation and tape emulation plugins, which they're kind of, I guess, less extreme than a lot of the kind of clipping that we're talking about in this case, but they involve clipping style distortion control of the signal. In the technical definition of distortion, as I said in some show a while back, kind of any change to the signal is effectively a distortion, but not even getting that nerdy. I think I'm right in saying I can't imagine that it would be possible to clip a signal in any way without introducing distortion of one kind or another. The question is, how audible is that distortion? So the way that Slate describes the way the FGX works is that it tailors the type of clipping depending on the input signal. So we were talking about how different signals are affected. It might choose a very hard clipping style if it's detecting that the input signal has lots of percussive elements, like drums, where you can probably get away with hearing less of that stuff. In theory, it should use a much softer type of distortion for smoother, warmer sounds. In practice, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it is a good tool. It does what it does, but in my experience, you can't push anything any louder with the FGX than with any other tool, because it just starts to distort stuff to a point that I'm not comfortable with. So, even something as sophisticated as that inevitably involves a level of distortion. And I think that's one of the big kind of points I would make from this, is that basically if you're choosing to use clipping, you're trading off distortion versus other. There's no free lunch. If you want to boost the level up above, harder up against the zero limit in digital, there has to be a trade-off somewhere. Something has to give. And in the case of clipping, it's a bit of distortion.
I was going to mention Soundtoy's Decapitator, which, if you think of what is actually happening to the peaks, Decapitator is a pretty good name for it.
Yes.
It is a distortion emulation, analog distortion emulation. So you have to be extremely careful about using that on a mix bus or in mastering. It is a very audible distortion. There's also some of the Air Bundle plugins, which comes with Pro Tools and is available separately as VST and AUs. The Air Distortion has a clipping option. The Lo-Fi plugin has clip controls. That one, unfortunately, limits you to 16 bits. So, it's made to be a lo-fi sound, but you can use it in a mix as a clipper only, if you wanted.
Cool. There are a ton of processes out there. I think probably almost anything that's involving any kind of analog emulation is probably going to involve some kind of clipping component in as part of the sound, because ultimately, if you push any piece of gear hard enough, eventually it will clip. And, you know, well, it's interesting because lots of people believe that pushing analog consoles really hard is part of that signature sound from back in the day and that we're all trying to recreate these days. But actually, you talk to guys, the guys who were designing the hardware and the people who were using it back then, and they will all tell you that, you know, absolutely not. They were always striving to keep things clean and pristine. I think that's one of those, it's a bit of a myth that sprung up. You know, there are, so this is one of my favorite rants. You know, there are people who, everybody's after the secret of, quotes, analog warmth. And I think maybe actually we should do an episode on analog warmth. But all I'll say at this point is, you know, there's lots of people who think that saturation and these kind of clipping style processes are part of that secret. And they might be a tiny little part of it. I mean, I certainly think, you know, pushing drums hard to tape involves a certain amount of kind of clipping saturation distortion automatically. And as we've already said, drums can handle that pretty well often if you don't do it too hard. So things like that are probably a factor, but there are so many things that go into making a warm analog sound, and clipping is, as far as I'm concerned, just a very small percentage part of it. You mentioned clipping converters, and I guess we should touch on that briefly. I have heard some big name mastering engineers say that deliberately clipping their converters is part of their recipe for achieving really extreme loudness.
Some converters do include a soft clip circuit.
So supposedly the highest end converters have more analog headroom, so you can effectively drive them into an analog clipping mode, and they will sound better than if you just tried to hard digital clip something inside the DAW. I mean, this is something that I personally have not experimented with myself.
I've never owned a converter that's good enough to do it.
No, and I've also heard people say that this is all a complete myth and that there aren't any converters that are actually that great. I mean, I can't speak from experience. You know, I have had an analog digital hybrid mastering setup back in the past, but I never pushed the converters. There wasn't a technique that I'd heard of then, and I mean, everybody knows I'm not that into loudness anyway, so it wasn't ever something that I kind of was tempted to experiment with. These days, I'm almost completely in the box because I think I get better results that way. And again, you know, clipping converters, if I'm going to do some clipping, I'd prefer to do it digitally and have complete control and flexibility over it. But that is, you know, another way that some people do it. And of course, people do it by actually owning a console or a classic piece of gear and pushing that really hard. That's another way that you can achieve these effects.
I'm sure that the converter clipping became popular or was widely used because there weren't a lot of good distortion plugins back then, or really like any good hardware distortions that you would want to put on your mix bus. They did it with Pro Tools HD, which was a fixed point system. It had more headroom, but you could take advantage of its limited headroom by pushing up signals really hot into it, and you cannot turn that distortion down. So that was one way of doing it, and I think that was one of the only ways that they could get more volume without pumping the limiter and things like that.
I think it was more about, I mean, you're right that the tools weren't available back then, but I think it was really the quest for loudness. I mean, I remember this being discussed at the mastering house where I used to work. There was a kind of debate amongst all of the engineers there about, we were hearing about these strategies of American mastering engineers of deliberately, you know, because when I was trained initially, digital clipping was a complete no-no. It was, you know, I mean, it technically violates the CD spec. If you have more than three consecutive samples hitting zero, you're out of spec. In practice, nobody pays a blind bit of notice to that these days. But, you know, that was kind of the angle that I was trained from. And I was taught to use limiters effectively to avoid that if you needed to. But then at some point, you know, the loudness wars were starting to take effect. And yeah, we had this debate about hearing about these American mastering engineers deliberately digitally clipping stuff because the very short transient clips were barely audible, if they were audible at all. You know, and there was this...
Or they would add a click or a crunch or something that they liked.
Yeah, they
it was different than what they were able to do.
Right, that people liked. And actually, I remember overdrive using the digital gain in a Sony 7030 DAT machine, had some built-in DSP, to do exactly that, to deliberately digitally clip things, and listen to the result. And we clipped a piano by 2 or 3 dBs and went, nah, and moved on. And you know, the rest of the world had a different opinion. But
so I heard about this like 10 years ago. It would have been like 2006 I heard about this.
Yeah, I was wrestling with it 99, 2000 was when I don't know when this debate about the digital clipping came in, but it would have been around about that time, because, you know, that was because we were listening to this stuff coming out of the US and just going, how did they get it that loud?
Yeah.
And actually, so to go into a little tangent, I was listening to a recent episode of Bobby Ozinski's podcast, where he was interviewing the guy who mastered, I mean, a ton of huge big name releases, but the Sia album was the one that sprang to mind. And he was basically saying, I mean, he was saying the loudness wars are still in full effect. Everybody still wants extreme loudness. You know, I have a different opinion on that, but that was his take on it. And Bobby was like, and you achieve that by using clipping, right? And he said, yeah. He was completely open about the fact that he happily clips as necessary. And basically what he said was, you know, if he, his point of view was that you don't notice it. And then at the points where you do, and he used the example of, say, a guitar solo, he said, at that point, I drop the limiter in. So he would do one pass of the song, just clipping, and then he would go back and effectively drop in the sections where the clipping distortion, he found it objectionable, with a limiter. And, you know, there would be a certain amount of compromise to the sound that he'd originally had in those sections. But he felt that that was getting a result that he was happy with. And I mean, you know, if you want an example of an album that's covered in, I mean, to me, it's plain as day that the Sia album is covered in limiting, in clipping distortion. It has exactly that kind of fizzy, I don't know, it doesn't have a gritty sound to it, but it definitely has this kind of, I'm going to use the word shish. I've just made that up. It's just got this thing about it that it, and it, I don't know. Yeah, I just, you know, if somebody had said to me, how did they get this that loud? I would have said, I think it's been clipped. So I just fundamentally disagree with what he's saying. And maybe we have different thresholds of what audibility is, or of taste, or the pressure that we're under by our clients. You know, but I just, yeah, it just plays back to me into this, the whole, I just don't think digitally clipping stuff is the right way to achieve things. You know, it's technically, it's a fault. And, you know, I know, oh, that's something I was going to mention back in the, right at the beginning of this show. You know, I mean, yes, it's a fault, but so was what the Beatles did on Revolution when they plugged a guitar straight into the mixing desk and just cranked it up so that it distorted. That's covered in analog clipping distortion, that guitar sound. If you listen to that track to this day, it's an incredibly aggressive guitar sound. And it's just one of those really early examples of a creative use of something that was, as far as the guys in lab coats at Abbey Road were concerned, a technical fault. These days, it's everywhere. So, you know, and there are people who say digital clipping is just the sound of music today. And, you know, if that's true, I wish it wasn't. And I don't believe that it is true. I just think it's something that's happening a lot. And I just think it's a shame. But, you know, for all the reasons that we've been into on all these other shows. So there we go. Anything else you want to add?
I think I had something, but it's gone now. Yeah.
It'll come back to you if you did. I think I had something, but it might have gone as well. That's okay. I'm just going to summarize this. I mean, as I do believe that clipping basically is a fault. So I think the golden rule is avoid unintentional clipping. You know, if you choose to use clipping, all well and good, but it should be a conscious decision for a good reason, you know, whatever that might be. Just like choosing to use it as part of a guitar sound or anything else is a creative decision. And therefore, I think that tools, clipping tools, whatever they might be, should not be the default method of controlling the peak level of music. I don't think it's a sound that suits everything. Something we haven't mentioned is the whole issue of floating point, I guess we could briefly say that, you know, in a floating point system like a modern DAW, it's not possible to clip the audio signal until you get to the output bus. So you don't have to worry too much about clipping channels, providing when it hits the stereo output bus, it's not hitting zero. It's the point where you export it. It's that point you made earlier on. If you turn something up and then turn it down, you're fine, unless it gets saved to a file. So the kind of the clipping is locked into the file. But even so, even with a modern 32-bit floating point system, you need to be careful, because some plugins don't use 32-bit floating point correctly, or they don't...
Or they intentionally add distortion that can't be removed by gain changes later on in the signal path.
Exactly. So, you know, at that point, clipping a channel fader or whatever could introduce clipping that you weren't aware of. So then you're in this unintentional clipping situation that I think you should avoid. To some extent, that's a safeguard where we can worry about this stuff less. You know, I mean, again, back in the day when I was starting out, all of the digital stuff was either 24 or 48 bit, but it was fixed point. So clipping was something you worried about at every stage. The signal flow and the gain structure was very important, even though you're in a digital system. These days, that's kind of less of a factor. Actually, my final point was just, I've already mentioned it. You know, if you want to use clipping, if you want to experiment with it, of course, do. It's another creative tool that we have at our disposal. It can achieve stuff that other techniques can't achieve sometimes, but it's like salt, you know? Salt is an essential ingredient of great cooking. Hey, we've gone right back to the introduction. That's great. We have some symmetry. salt is an essential ingredient of great cooking, but if you use too much of it, it tastes horrible. And I think clipping is the same. It can be an essential ingredient of certain types of sound and to achieve certain results, but too much of it always sounds horrible.
Yeah. I like that.
Cool. Okay, well, I hope you guys listening found this useful or interesting. Head over to themasteringshow.com to check out the show notes. We've got links to some of the things we've been talking about, maybe even some of those Facebook discussions. Sign up to the email list to be notified of future episodes and any other cool stuff we might have going on. Check out John's site, reaperblog.net. And thank you, John, in advance for editing and mixing this episode. Enjoy that. Thanks to Kaylee Law for doing the music, as always. And please head over and find us on social media. We're both on Facebook and Twitter. We're everywhere. John, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure.
And thanks, everybody, for listening. We're going to have to edit this out because we're so far off topic. So far off topic that John has nothing to say in response to that.
No, I don't.
If you've been enjoying The Mastering Show and want to improve your own mastering skills, I can help. I've made 3 online courses to do exactly that. Home Mastering EQ and Home Mastering Compression are always available whenever you'd like to try them. Find out how using compression and limiting in mastering is different and why, and unlock your own instinct for EQ. Just go to productionadvice.co.uk/resources. I also run my Home Mastering Masterclass course several times every year. It's my biggest and most popular course. I master different songs, covering different topics, and using different software every week for 8 weeks. Plus, giving you access to my exclusive online community and the chance to take part in monthly live streams where I answer questions and give feedback on your mixes and masters. To find out about all this and more, head over to productionadvice.co.uk/resources. You can also connect with me on social media. I'm on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Facebook, where I chat to people and share links to cool audio production resources. Come and say hello. And there's also a ton of blog posts and videos on my main website, productionadvice.co.uk, including a series of free videos I made for Sound on Sound magazine called Mastering Essentials, where I walk you through my own mastering process from start to finish with step-by-step examples. And of course, there are plenty more episodes of The Mastering Show, just like this one. Thanks for listening.